I decided to do the old, I'll see if I can install 10.3.2 before we talk. And the install process is just, it's an over-install or whatever. It's a bloody nightmare. My machine reboots. I've got my MacBook plugged into the monitor. It reboots and the screen's blank. My MacBook screen's blank. My main screen's blank. The touch bar showing just the escape key. And my Disney thing came, said my MacBook's, you know, landed on the network. So I knew it was starting up, but I didn't know what was going on. There was no indicator, nothing. So I do a force restart. And long story short, basically, it wasn't showing anything on the main monitor. And when I unplugged everything, it suddenly appeared on the display saying installing. But it said 40 minutes. And the first time,
yeah,
it failed,
yeah.
First time it failed and said, can't be installed on this Mac. It's like, great, restart. And without me doing anything, it just sort of does it again. It did it on my iMac last time as well. And then it said 40 minutes, which is when I texted you saying, I might be in trouble here. I might have to use the iPad.
It always says that, but then it just shrinks rapidly.
Yeah, it did the Windows thing, you know, where it says like 7 days and then 2 hours and 3 minutes. There's that famous screenshot someone posted where it was literally like, you know, 7 days or something. But this basically said 40 minutes. Then it was like 39 minutes. And I'm looking at it. And that's when I'm texting you thinking I'm in trouble here. I look again and it's on the login screen. It's like, oh, okay.
Yeah, it's weird. Do you use File Vault?
No.
Because I always wonder if that has an impact on it, the encrypted drive, because it takes longer to do various bits and pieces. I don't know how they calculate that thing, but it's always really wonky for me. But always on the good side. It's always on the, you know, it's much quicker than it looks like it's going to be. Scale of things. I've never had it last longer than what it said.
But it's just the weird way that when the progress bar was on the screen, so at one point I had the Apple logo in the progress bar. That's when I unplugged it from the monitor. But the progress bar didn't know if it was moving, because you know, you look at the pixels and think, has it moved? And so this is a crazy thing. I reckon if I touched the keyboard it would have done something. So I thought it's crashed. I thought I'm just going to reboot this. So I hit the power button, you know, the sort of Touch ID, which you need to hold down for about 5 seconds or whatever to restart it. And luckily it didn't restart, but by touching it, it then came up with the progress. It came up with the value. So it's as if it was, you know, someone's decided, let's just show them a blank progress bar until they press something and then we'll show them the actual values. It's just ridiculous. But anyway.
Yeah, they need to sort out all their bugs, Apple, don't they? Jesus, they're not having a... Not having a good week.
Yeah, it was. I love both of them. I thought they were both. I mean, if you fail spectacularly, you know.
There is. I mean, the date issue with 11.2. I mean, I have a lot of apps that I've built myself that have recurring notifications daily, and I literally is actually a really good from a freelance point of view. People that freelance will enjoy this. I had a client who I'd built an app for which has a notification, and they hadn't paid their invoice yet, and I was getting a bit sick of emailing them saying pay my invoice. So it was great, because I was able to email them and say, hey, there's this bug in iOS 11.2 which is going to completely crash your iPhone unless you update. By the way, pay my invoice. So it was a quite nice lead into that. That one, I mean, I don't know what the fuck is wrong with the iOS calendar team or people involved. Normally at this time of year we get the issue with the clock where it's not worked for daylight savings time and your alarms have all been cancelled or something. That's usually a staple, you know Christmas is around the corner when there's an iOS daylight savings time bug. That didn't seem to happen this year, and I was like, wow, that's impressive. They finally fixed that after 11 years. But instead they put a thing in so that if you get to December 2nd and you have a recurring notification, it'll just put your phone in an endless loop.
But the bug was to do with local notifications only. And I wish some of these Twitterers and podcasters, the Vector podcast, for example, this new daily one by Rennie Ritchie, I wish they just used the word push. They kept avoiding the word push. It was like, oh, these don't affect notifications that come from a server. It only affects notifications that are generated on the device. Right, so... can you just say local notifications and push notifications? Describe the difference, and then that's how you refer to it. Done. What I don't get, it was apparently a bug in the local notification system caused a memory leak or something.
Yeah.
But why that date? Because, you know, with certain...
That's weird,
I know, with Americanisms and the UK difference, and, you know, I've had issues before with old .NET and ASP stuff where I used to do where the servers would completely cock up because it would reverse the date on the server for some setting reason, into the American format, and we'd be using the UK format, and it would crash because you were trying to pass, you know, it thought you were trying to pass the 24th month. So instead of the 24th day of the 12th month, it was the 24th month and the 12th day, and it would crash. It would fail. So I get that. But this was the 2nd of December, you know.
You expect to have like bugs on things like February 29th. Like,
exactly.
That is where you expect calendar issues or, you know. If it's the only thing I can think of, I mean, it's close to the beginning of the month. Maybe some months got counted an extra day for the 31st or something when they only had 30 days and that overflowed it or something. Who knows? Maybe that's why it's a bug that didn't get caught until the day before and then everyone went, oh, shit.
But the interesting thing with this is, you know, there's times in the past with the alarm stuff, like you say, I'm not sure how quickly they fixed those in the past. But this was pretty unprecedented in terms of, you know, I remember waking up in the morning and seeing these things saying, you know, phones are crashing. Mine was fine. I didn't have any local apps that do local notifications. I did have on my iPad.
Mine was fine.
Yeah, I didn't check it. But that I was fine, wasn't affected. But then suddenly went and saw someone tweeted, there's an update, and they'd released an update. So, yes, they made a mistake. Yeah,
it wasn't just an update. It was iOS 11.2. They just released it 5 days earlier.
They just pushed it out. Exactly. Yeah. And it's the same with this, you know, this root password issue. It was a pretty bad
interesting.
A pretty bad bug, you know. So basically, on a High Sierra machine where somebody, and, you know, I've always, for the last few years, I've done whatever, what some people might consider to be the wrong thing, and always done a restore. I've done a time machine restore on my upgrade. So I'm pretty much running, you know, the same system I set up years ago. So, and years ago, I set up a root password. So I wasn't affected on my main machine. But I did set up a VM to test this on a new install. So if you're running High Sierra, fresh install, you haven't done anything with root, you haven't done anything with remote logins or anything, you've just set up the machine, stock machine you've bought or whatever, if you go and try and auth, either logging in on the machine or authing in one of the system preferences to do some sort of permission that needs authorization of the root admin, when it comes up with your username to auth, if you just change that to root and hit enter, it fails, and if you hit enter again, it does, it just lets you straight in. But it not only lets you in, it enables the root user, and effectively you can sort of, you can't understand why it
doesn't
log
you in though, does it? It's only in the security pane.
Yes,
so it's
exactly,
only if you're already logged in. So if you go to a computer that's already logged in as someone and then go to the security panel and then type root space and then enter, then it does it. And at that point it creates a root user and then you can log into the computer as root.
Exactly, which
is hilarious because loads of people test it. Went, my God, this bug's real, and then suddenly they've now opened their computer up to a real exploit. Because if they hadn't done that, then no one could have got into their machine. But now that they can, and if you've got like Back to My Mac enabled, or you've got public sharing, so I read about it and I was like, huh, that's stupid, but that'll get fixed shortly. Didn't test it, didn't look at it, and then
fix
came out, and it's like done.
Yeah, 24 hours is fixed, but. The interesting thing was that it was mentioned before in a forum. So the guy that actually tweeted it publicly, who was just a bloody idiot, obviously did it, you know, for the likes and the retweets. It was already mentioned in a public forum, actually as a solution to get into your Mac if you get locked out, which is hysterical. Nice. Someone actually posted it without anybody's. A few people went, should it be doing that?
That's interesting.
But the funniest thing is exactly what you said. So if you just think about, okay, it's a bad bug. It's a bad bug. Shouldn't have happened. All these things should never happen. Once it was public and out there, which I just thought, I mean, I tweeted about, you know, I thought it was this guy said, oh, I think it was a good idea to let Apple know publicly. It's like, well, that's like saying that you've just found out your neighbors left their back door unlocked. So you just go and tell everybody that the back door's unlocked because you wanted your neighbor to do something about it. That's just ridiculous. So they fixed it, you know, next day it's all solved, but then actually broke something else, file sharing. But anyway, we'll come back to that. But the key thing here is how everybody goes crazy about, oh my God, our Macs have been, you know, our Macs have been exposed for years. No, they haven't. They've only been exposed if you've done a certain number of key things. First, you have to install High Sierra. And we know that there's loads of people that go, oh, I don't want to install the first version because I'm scared of everything. So they won't install that. So you have to be a High Sierra user. Second, you have to have not enabled your root user and created a password. If you're a normal developer who's done that, it's not a problem at all. And that was a quick fix as well. You could just enable the root user and set a password.
I've never set a root password or a user.
Yeah,
I'm a developer. So, just putting that out.
Yeah, but you drop your iPhone X, but
Oh, that is low. Maybe Android developers have to enable Root, Jason. I don't know.
I went there. We'll come back to that. Let's smash it. So you have to have installed High Sierra. You have to have not done your root password thing. And like you say, you have to have been, you know, someone has to be logged in on the device. So they have to be in your presence or in your office or in your home. You have to have been logged in and left your machine. They have to actually then do this thing to enable that password. They have to make sure that that remote access is then enabled or you've already done that. Then they can go to another machine or another place in the same office and same network. And now they can remotely hack your machine, or they have to set up some sort of firewall rules, or you have to. And now they can do it from the outside. So there's all these different things that have to happen for your machine to be in any way compromised. And yes, it is possible for that to happen, but it's not like, oh my God, my High Sierra machine that's been sitting at my desk or, you know, in the living room when I'm working at night or whatever has been, exploitable for months that I've had it. Wrong. That's just not the case. But it's the typical bullshit that you get, which is really frustrating. But yeah, anyway, it wasn't
the thing I like most about this. I mean, yes, it's a bad bug. These things happen, no? But they owned it pretty quickly. Like, as soon as it sort of went public, they said, yep, this should never have happened. There is a fix coming. And it was the first, I think it's the second time they've used their emergency system, which lets them push a security fix to your computer without you doing anything. And you can't stop it. It happens. And it's great because, like, the patch note for it is like 2017-001. It's like, it's November, end of December. And this is the first patch that you've had to do of this nature. I think the only other one was for some, was it like a DNS bug back in like 2014 or something? It was ages ago was the other time that they've used it. But it was great because, I mean, I turned my computer on the next day. Well, I didn't even turn it on. It was just asleep. I waked my computer up and then there was just a little thing popped up in the corner saying, you've been patched with 2017-001 done. And I was like, oh, that's really cool. I like that. So I like the way that they were quick to say, yeah, this shouldn't have happened. This is a fuck up, but we're going to fix it. And they pushed that fix out and now everyone is patched. I mean, I don't think it's possible for you to not be patched from this now. I don't think there's a way of disabling those. I mean, I guess if you're disconnected from the internet, but then who cares?
Yeah, but so
impressive, right?
I just love the it's this whole thing about how people react to this stuff. So it's like, oh my God, this is terrible. You know, this is we've got this exploit. Apple have lost the plot. This is horrific. And so then they go, right, we're really sorry about this. You know, it shouldn't have happened. We should do better. You deserve better. They actually used the apology, you know, the apology word and said sorry. And we're going to push this release out and force this release out. Then suddenly it's like, whoa, wait a minute. Apple can push releases. Apple can push fixes to our devices. I don't like this. You know, it's like, hold on a minute. What do you want here? You know, it's like, there's a bug. They fixed it. They're now doing the right thing by pushing that fix to everybody to make sure it's on everybody's machine. And now that's suddenly a wrong thing. It's just, and then added to that, you get the people that go, oh, this is just ridiculous. You know, like you say, it's the first fix this year. And it's like, oh, this is ridiculous. I think we should just consider Windows. And it's like, holy shit. Do you know how many security fixes? That's like saying my iPhone gets a bit warm when I charge it. I think I'm going to go and buy a Galaxy Note 7. it's exactly the same thing.
Oh.
It's like, what? I can't stand this one patch a year thing. I'm going to install Windows and run Windows so I can have 40 patches a week and probably in security issues that have been there for years. But anyway, I'll be accused of being an Apple lover if I keep banging on about Windows. But it was an interesting week.
Well, one of the funniest things about that, though, is that someone reminded me of a great bug. I think it was a Windows 98 where you could log into any Windows machine because when it asked for a password, you could like press like the tooltip button and it'd bring up a pane. And basically every pane that popped up, or Windows, or you could, there was always some way of then making it generate another window. So like you could like click the help button and ask for help on that and then go into preferences and then click on that and open that. And basically you got to a point where you had like 100 open windows and the thing would just crash the Windows like interface thing and just let you log straight in and you'd be in. And it's like, that was easy.
But there was,
and that was a genuine exploit. You know, that's just one that happened regardless.
That was brilliant. But there was also there was one about tooltips and printers and things where it effectively opened, it might be the same one, but it opened a file listing, you know, like File Explorer. You'd eventually get to the ability, I think it was to do with saving PDFs. You'd go through this printer stuff You go from tooltip, you know, from the login screen, you go into printing, then you'd go into picking a printer or something. And at some point you could pick PDF or something and you could get to a file system window. You could get to an Explorer view. And once you're in the Explorer view and it's obviously expecting you to pick a file or specify a file, you could right click on one of the files or one of the things in the Explorer view and click open. And at that point, you know, the blue background of the desktop, which is, you know, blue and dead because you're at the login screen, that would suddenly fill with all the icons and you'd be in. It's just like, that's awesome. I mean, I love how people find this stuff. It's always like, I think I'm just going to go randomly and do stuff. But yeah, that's the most, that's the funniest thing about this is that it's really easy to focus. Yes, it was a massive mistake, should never have happened. There's lots of things that have to align to make it a full exploit, and there's no proof that anybody's machine was actually exploited by anybody. No evidence has come forward to that effect, and it should never have happened. There's no excuse for it, yada, yada, yada. But I think based on the experience of and the history of Apple with this stuff, I don't think it's that big a deal overall.
And they handled it very well and very quickly. Yeah. I mean, yeah, they broke something when they pushed it out, but it's like, well, do you want this massive exploit or do you want a broken thing? And obviously that's why I think it was Gruber that said, oh, if they'd waited 2 days to do it, then maybe that wouldn't have happened. But at the same time, it would have been better to lock it down and be like, well, that's broken for a bit, tough shit. I thought it was pretty good. But as you say, it's one of these things that spirals out of control, like everyone testing it. Whoa, it happens on my machine. It happens on your machine. Yeah, it happens on my machine. It's dreadful. Yeah. Fucking Apple. And now you've got a machine that's completely open to someone logging in. It's like, well, you've just fucked that up for yourself, haven't you? Well done.
Yeah, but it's also the battle. It's like these guys that hack the HomePod firmware or whatever. It's like a battle of just publicity. It's a battle of who can expose more about this to get retweets and likes and all that bullshit. And it's just what the world we're in at the moment, which is sad. The funniest thing is we're talking about it now, talked about it for 10 minutes or whatever, and it's already fixed. And by the time most of these podcasts and stuff came out the next day, they were already talking about it and it was already fixed. So it's just like, you know, the horse is gone, you know, forget it, move on. To the
I
next
thought the
thing.
Way you suddenly mentioned the HomePod there was going to be a beautiful segue into
it could be
discussing the HomePod, but it didn't turn out that way.
No,
it's annoying. It's been well. There's a number of things that are interesting because there's supposed to be like the iMac Pro is supposed to be coming out this month. They've not said it's not yet, have they?
Yeah, exactly.
Don't know what's happening with that. The HomePod they just turned around and went, it's going to take a little bit longer, which is a shame because I just, as you remember last episode, got to the point where I was like, I'm going to get one after shitting on it for a load of episodes. I was like, you know what? I'm going to get one and put my Sonos Play 1s in my living room to go with the surround sound. And now it's not coming. So it's like,
It's interesting. I don't know what it's the typical thing of trying to work out what they're thinking and what they're doing, but it depends how they're for me, I guess. And based on the fact that we use these, you know, Echoes, and we just got the Echo shows. I've just got a few of those for the different rooms so I can have a nice little video intercom system, which is quite cool. Mm-hmm. And I still would be interested in getting a HomePod, but I guess it's, I think the assumption of most people is that it's trying to be a competitor to Echo rather than it's trying to be a really good speaker that just happens to have Siri. And
it's
going to
be a Sonos with Siri, basically.
Exactly, which is what my impression of it is. I don't think of it or see it as being a competitor to Echo because they can't at this stage. They haven't announced, but they haven't talked about any kind of ecosystem of development or skills or anything. Everything is tied to tied to Siri. So if you did, you're talking to Siri, you're effectively it can piggyback on your phone and do stuff through the phone, etc. So I guess you might be able to say things like, you know, add so and so to things, and it would add it to things because it's doing it through your phone. I don't know how that works.
There are certain intents that you can add, but they're limited. It's not the full subset of Siri intents that you get as a developer. It's just three of them, and I forget which ones. I think probably public ones that don't matter. So like, I don't think to-do lists will be one. I'm not sure. I'm just guessing at this, but I could look it up, but I'm not going to. But I think something like ride sharing is probably one that you can get because, you know, it's just hailing a car. It doesn't matter who in the house does it. It's going to come to the house, isn't it? Whereas a to-do list, like you say, you could have multiple different people. But then I don't know if the HomePod, because we haven't seen the HomePod, and the people that hack all this shit just are interested in bullshit like, oh, look at its icon or whatever. It doesn't help to say, well, does it have multiple accounts? How does that work? How is that problem solved? Because that is a legitimate problem, as I understand it, with the Alexa, is that you have everything shared, isn't it, really? Like your kids can buy stuff on your card and
you have a household and you have profiles and you can say, and I had a lot of issue when I first, for some reason they ship these things pre-set up for you, so if you buy it through your Amazon account, when they arrive they're already tied to your account, but for some reason the shows when they arrive
pretty cool.
Cool, but for some reason when I got the shows they were in my account, but they were tied to Hannah's profile. So I'm switching them on and I'm trying to do stuff like listen to music and test it. And it's saying, you know, you don't have Prime Music. And I'm thinking, well, I do have Prime Music. I've got all that stuff. I don't know what's going on. And it turned out that it was on her user account. And the only indicator, when you think about the fact that this thing's got a damn screen, so it should be able to tell you this. The only indication that it was in her profile was I thought, okay, let me try and play something from TuneIn because TuneIn's free. I said, play Radio 4 from TuneIn. And it says playing Radio 4 from TuneIn from Hannah's account. And you're like, okay, hold on a minute. So then you say switch profile or switch user, and it switches to my account, and now everything worked. So I don't know what happened there.
Oh, I see. It's like that.
But there's certain things that are in your – but this is the annoying thing about it. There's certain things that are still shared. So calendars, for example, don't seem to be account-based. Calendars like a general setting. Things like Spotify and stuff like that is a general setting. So the calendars that come up are my calendars. So in theory, the kids haven't realized this yet, but they could just sort of add events to my calendar, you know, which would be really annoying. or even go delete my appointments today. And it would, you know, I don't know if that works, but it could do.
That's the problem I have with my family sharing my iCloud account with my wife is that I added like Ben going to Sweden when I went away to play games with my friend John. And then there was just an update, a notification came through and it said, this has been deleted from your calendar. I was like, what the fuck? And then a new thing had been put in that just said, Ben abandoning his wife. I was like, thank you.
So this is the thing. I'm wondering whether maybe the HomePod will have stuff like instead of it doing stuff to your reminders list, maybe there's a group, maybe you can basically specify or create a shared reminder list and that's how that works. I don't know.
But that wouldn't work with things. So I don't think that's going to work with third parties. That's why I think something like ride sharing probably is. I could just look this up, couldn't I?
I guess it's just because we don't know much about this thing apart from what's been hacked. We don't really know if it's trying to be. I don't think it's trying to be an Echo because I don't think it's got the. You know, they don't have with Siri the same thing. They'd have that now. They'd have the ability to do skills. They'd have the ability to do like Amazon do, and they don't. So unless HomePod's going to come along and say, by the way, here's a brand new Siri that you can now have skills, and there's a skills app store and all this stuff. Then, or intense app store or whatever, then it's not going to happen. So what we're talking about here is they're going for that market of Sonos, but it happens to have Siri in it. What's interesting is why it's been delayed. It could just be end of year and they've got other shit to deal with and AirPods did it or whatever, but you can read all this stuff into it, but it's clearly about priorities at this stage, but it's disappointing.
And it is a problem for them because if they're trying to position themselves as being more Sonos-like, that they want to make a really decent speaker that just happens to have this, it's particularly bad for them that Sonos now have the Sonos One, which is a really nice speaker, which has Alexa built into it because they did a partnership with Amazon. And so they're not up against, that is their main competitor for Christmas, I would guess, in terms of this space, and they fucked it up. So I've just had a look on the developer website for SiriKit, and I'm completely wrong. So messaging works, so you can send text messages through apps that support messaging services. So you can use like WhatsApp and whatever from your HomePod.
Okay.
And to-do lists are. So create reminders, update a to-do list, or check your grocery list. Those are the only two intents that work with HomePod. The others that work with Siri but not on HomePod are QR code scanning, ride booking, payments, photo search, VoIP calling, workouts, and climate and radio.
Okay. So they must have some way of either switching accounts, switching user, or saying something like add it to Jason's reminders or something, or add it to my
judging on past behavior, that the HomePod, you will sign into it with your iCloud account and it will be your HomePod, not anyone else's.
Yeah.
And there will not be really a multi-profile solution at all. I can't imagine. I mean, nothing else has a concept of being able to work with multiple accounts. I can't imagine that the first thing that's going to have that is the HomePod.
Yeah, that's
true. I think if it did, we'd probably hear about it from all hacks and leaks and stuff. So I imagine you're just going to sign in with your account and it'll be just like AirPods, or like when you get a keyboard or something and it says Ben's HomePod or Ben's keyboard or whatever. It'll probably be like that. It'll just be set up with your...
Yeah, well, I suppose we'll see eventually in 2018 at some point.
Which would be fun. By the time, I guess with creating reminders, it's fine for if you say remind me to do blah blah blah, that's fine because it adds it into iCloud reminders, and if you've got family sharing, it would share it with your entire family, so it works from that point of view. But with things, it's going to be like, if you want to add something to your things list and Hannah wants to add something to her things list, no.
Yeah.
Tough shit. And the same, well, like texting. It's weird that it's these messaging ones that don't.
Yeah, exactly.
How weird.
I wonder how that's going to work. Like you say, it must be.
I mean, again, it must just come from your account.
I don't understand how they can think like that, that you're going to install, you know, unless everyone, they think their target market is single people that live alone. You know, I can't.
Just me at my HomePod.
Yeah, exactly. Everyone has their own HomePod. You know, it's just very.
Yeah, it does seem weird. Yeah. I can't see anything about it that suggests there's anything. I mean, it's very light. I mean, you basically just adopt the messaging intent and then it works. But I mean, there's no reason that they couldn't have profiles. I mean, it doesn't matter to the developer. They don't know because it'd just be forwarded to your phone. So if you could say, this is Hannah, send a text to Jason using WhatsApp, then there's no reason why it couldn't send that command to her phone rather than to yours.
Yeah, true.
But I mean, that's just all on Apple's side to do it. And I've seen nothing to suggest that that's going to happen.
Yeah.
It's actually quite funny they've not updated this website, the Siri Kit page, because it's like, test the voice-only experience by using Siri through headphones connected to your iOS device with iOS 11.2 beta. Download iOS 11.2 beta. It's like, yeah, that's gone. We're already public with that.
They've got too much. They've got a lot they're dealing with, isn't it? It's like, you know, they've already got these fixed things in time where every year they're doing new macOS releases, every year they're doing new iOS releases, they're doing new devices. There's all those things that happen every year anyway. Then they've got, you know, the HomePod comes along, there's going to be firmware updates for that. It's going to be one of these things like, you know, the Echo was, I think the first gen Echo was probably 3 years old now, and they've just done the second gen. You know that Apple are going to do the HomePod, and then within a bloody year they're going to do the next HomePod. It's just like, they're going to have so many balls in the air that they've got to juggle. It's going to be crazy trying to keep everything updated. Then you've got the stores and the websites and all these little phrases everywhere that need updating. It's just crazy amount of stuff. You can see why, and knowing what corporates are like, because they pretend they're not a corporate, but they are, you know exactly what it's like as a developer working for big companies and enterprise and corporates in that, you know, I know what it's like when I do work for some of my corporate clients where it's like, I want to change that one piece of text on this particular part of the website and I have to raise a Jira ticket and then it has to go through some other thing and it has to go through some other thing and then it has to go through continuous integration check of the push request you put up and then it gets merged in and then it has to be gone in a queue to get published and then someone publishes it and it's like a week later or 2 weeks later. And there's certain things where, you know, Twitter accounts need to be updated on a site that I've updated and it hasn't been done for 4 months because the work's been done, but no one's pushed it live. So you can see how these things happen. It's not as easy as just FTPing to a server and changing a phrase, you know.
No, there's a lot and of people, hoops to jump
people,
through.
Exactly. And people think, oh, God, why can't they change? Well, this is easy fix. Why can't they do that? Well, you know, that root password hack is not as simple as going into a bit of whatever it is, Objective-C or Swift, probably Objective-C, and fixing that piece of code. It's not as easy as that and saying, right, you know, do a build and now copy that file over. There's all this other machinery that has to take place.
Especially when you've already got other builds generated for all the different phones. Because remember that we don't really have to deal with it, but previously when you wanted to install like a beta, you had to put in like your exact model number. Like an iPhone 5 in the US was different to an iPhone 5 in the UK because they all have different software and all have different stuff. And if someone's fixed a bug for something else but that hasn't gone through QA but your one has and it's ready, it's a lot of merging and getting stuff right. And that's where probably a lot of shit happens as well, because if you screw up your merging, then you end up with the HomePod thing where you push out a build which has got a shit ton of code in it that shouldn't be public.
Because so someone
it's very dangerous to be trying to rush this shit. It's
exactly
tricky. Yes. Don't mind. So it's delayed. Anyway. Don't know when it's coming, but HomePod is coming at some point. But it's certainly going to be missing Christmas. So they've really screwed themselves over with that one. Not that it looks like they need the money. I don't think it's going to cause them any damage.
Exactly.
It's not like it's a product that they've. It's not like they had the HomePod one, and now they've announced the HomePod 2, and now no one's buying HomePods because they're waiting for the new one, and then they've missed Christmas with it and screwed themselves in the foot. It's money that they weren't getting anyway, so it's not a huge deal, and they seem to be doing rather well from everything else, judging by Black Friday sales figures and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, $7 billion in one weekend for iPhone X is, you know, not... There's nothing wrong. You know, that's not too bad situation. I love the. I love people comparing all this stuff that's happening and all this stuff going on to them. The typical stuff. They've lost the plot. They've doomed. They don't know what they're doing. They've lost direction. Everything's going wrong. And you think, well, and then you see people like Samsung and people from Samsung stepping in and saying stuff. And it's like, hold on, your phones actually burst into flames and were banned from flights. You know,
yeah.
that's a little more serious
issue.
there are still signs at airports saying, even though the Note 7 is gone, there are still signs that say you cannot have. And if you create a Wi-Fi network on a plane, guaranteed, called Note 7, Galaxy Note 7, they will find you and kick you off the plane. that stuff still happens. That's the worst PR ever. So they're just going to sail through this and everything's going to continue as normal. And it's not a big deal. Anyway, let's talk about Xbox.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So you've got the Xbox One X, haven't you?
Yes.
Yep, and I do too, and it's very, very nice, especially now that a few more games have been updated for it. So I've got I've been playing Fallout 4 again lately because I got a 4K update, which looks particularly nice. I mean, the problem with all of this stuff is that nearly every game still runs at 30 FPS, but it is a lot of the time, most of the games I've been playing are running at a true native 4K, sometimes with like a dynamic resolution scaler, so sometimes they might drop down to like 1880p or something like that rather than 2160p, but generally most of the time you're getting native 4K, The PlayStation 4 Pro never does like a native 4K. Like, the fact that they market it as a 4K machine is just like, personally I think it's like an advertising standards issue, because it's not. It's mostly 1440p upscaled with checkerboard rendering to make it look 4K, but it's not native 4K. It's nowhere near it. It's like 40% of the pixels of 4K. Whereas the Xbox One X does do it, but a lot of games haven't been updated yet, and those that have, sometimes they're prioritized different things and you can't pick and choose. Like, most people would generally prefer to have 1080p, like actual 1080p but running at 60 frames a second, than they would having 4K running at 30, but you can't pick and choose with most games. They're just done however the developer wants it, so most typically tend to be higher resolution, and the frame rate can suffer. And in some cases, there are games where the frame rate is actually worse than the base Xbox One. So, like Quantum Break. Quantum Break has gone up, because on the original Xbox, it was actually running at 720p, which is pretty abysmal. Just because it's quite intense. And that would be around 30 FPS, but maybe a bit less. And the patch that they've put out for it now, there are places where it drops to like 25 frames a second. It's not quite 4K. It's like a 1600p, I think, maybe 1440. And there's loads of artifacts and like really bad glitches and stuff. And it's like, oh, this isn't great. So it's not brilliant. But in a lot of games, it looks really good. There are some big improvements to a lot of titles. A lot of things look a lot better. I mean, if you've got a 4K screen, which you don't, do you? You're running it on 1080p, aren't you?
Yeah, so I need to. I mean, I can't really do a side by side because I don't have two screens. But I want to try loading up the Xbox One and just having a look, because I can't see a 4K experience. But I know, I'm pretty sure that what I'm seeing, and I think we've discussed this, that it's like a 4K downscaled. There's some textures in certain places that I think are doing the scaling thing. Yeah, they don't look great. But the thing I noticed immediately was the smoothness of everything just running. Games that I previously played, so I'd run the Call of Duty World War II is probably the one I play at the moment, plus Titanfall 2. Those are the two games I switch between. Battlefront 2's come out and I play a little bit of that, but Battlefront 2 pisses me off because every time in the movies you shoot a stormtrooper and what I need is hardcore mode. I need shoot a stormtrooper, they're dead. I don't mind being shot and I'm dead. What I hate is unloading 50 bloody shots at someone and they're still walking around and then kill you. But anyway, so those were the two games I played, and Titanfall was good on the Xbox One. It was a bit choppy in places, but it was generally. I'm only thinking that now and realizing that now because of the experience with the new one. So, I put Call of Duty on. That I think I might not. No, I did play it on the Xbox, and then on the Xbox One, and then I played it on the X. But the X sits on top of my desk, and it's so bloody tiny. I didn't realize because I didn't have the S. I didn't realize how small that damn thing was. It was amazing. But the first thing I noticed was it just felt and it looked and felt. You can't put your finger on it. You know that there's some sort of speed improvement. Something's a bit more buttery and a bit smoother.
I can tell you exactly what both of those things are. So, A, the original Xbox One didn't do 60 frames a second in those games. It tried, but you'd get little glitches. And it's those bits where the frame rate just drops, maybe only for a second or two, but you go down from maybe 60 FPS to like 58. Okay. And so suddenly you've missed a frame somewhere, and then you're like, oh, that looks choppy. Whereas the Xbox One X just maintains it solidly.
Right.
So it doesn't, so it feels that smoothness that you're talking about. And then the textures, they can, not only is it rendering at 4K and then subscaling it down so that it looks nicer because it's basically oversampled, but also the 4K one will have better textures. So some of like the rocks and stuff might have looked a bit blocky before or a bit patchy, whereas now they'll be like perfectly rendered for 4K, and then they're being subsampled down, so they just look really crisp and nice. So everything about it will just look nicer. Now, for most people, the Xbox One X, there's not much point if you've got a 1080p screen because you're not getting the full whack from it. It's still much nicer, especially for games like that where you're playing shooters where you do want 60 FPS and they try and hit that.
Yeah.
But for a lot of games, especially things like Assassin's Creed, for example, looks really, really good at 4K, and you've got HDR in there as well, so it's you've got really nice lighting and stuff, but it's still running at 30 FPS, sometimes less. And so on the Xbox One, it's much the same, it's just not as pretty, but if you subsample it down, it's still going to look much the same. So it does vary game to game, and that's the biggest problem with it, is that you don't know what you're going to get, what the difference is going to be. It's not like when you buy a new console and you know that everything is going to look better and that everything is new and shiny, because it's not a new console, it's all of the games from the previous one. I can't really think of a good comparison. It's kind of like you do play games where you have them on both platforms, for example. So like you might have bought a game that was available on the Xbox 360 and the Xbox One, like GTA 5. And on the Xbox One, the GTA 5 looks much nicer, and it's, you know, you can tell it looks better. The Xbox One X doesn't have that delineation, because while it should look better, most of the extra horsepower is designed to make it look better at 4K, like to get from that 1080p to 4K. So an Xbox One at 4K looks like shit, because it's, you know, most of the time it's not even a 1080p picture, and so it's blown up and it's like, ugh, blocky, doesn't look as nice as everything else you're looking at on that screen. And so this just makes it look better there, but it doesn't do much else beyond that. And so that's the hurdle to jump over. It's not a new console, it's a slight boost to make things better for this one subset of people.
Yeah, exactly. So I mean, it's, you know, equating it to things like if you went from a retina device, non-retina device, to a retina device, and there were, you know, you could immediately see that everything's crisper and everything's different. With what I'm seeing is, first of, like, loading Titanfall 2 was incredibly smooth. You know, like you say, it's the 60 frame thing. It was just like, holy shit, this is just amazing. You know, just sliding along and jumping around. But then I've also noticed little incidental things that I didn't notice before, like little fires and little flames and effects and things that you're just suddenly pointing them out now, thinking, I just don't remember seeing that sort of really nice effect there. And it's as if, you know, we've got all this horsepower, let's throw some extra stuff in there as well. But I mean, I love it. I mean, I just think I don't see any of the glitchiness. There's a few I guess with some of the things like the World War II game, there's a lot of really nice textures in there. It's definitely doing the scaling thing, but there's also some, they've still got some low res textures in there somewhere that look a bit crap in places. Yeah. But still, the overall experience is really smooth, really nice. And the damn thing doesn't even get hot, is what gets me. You know, the Xbox One is sort of under my desk on a little pedestal, which is probably not a great idea, because it's got
enough
vent space.
That big, chunky power cable as well for the original Xbox One.
Yeah.
Just like the 360 had. Massive, big brick that you had to have outside of the box.
Yes, and I've gone through two of those already, because one failed and started clicking. The fan was, like, clicking.
Oh, yeah.
But it gets warm. You know, the top of the desk that it's underneath, it's not touching the bottom, there's space. But the desk actually gets warm from it, whereas this thing is got more horsepower. It's doing more work. You know, all the smoothness and everything. It just doesn't seem to feel hot at all. But yeah, it's great.
I think you nailed it when you said that it's like the jump from something like the 3GS to the iPhone 4. In that, if you have a 4K TV and you plug in an original Xbox One into it, it looks like when you went to the iPhone 4. And you used an app that hadn't been updated for it.
Yeah.
That's how it looks. It's like, oh, yeah, exactly. Jesus, that's blocky and horrible. And so the Xbox One X just smooths that out. It's basically just the CPU and GPU update just to make that nicer. But that's all it does. It's just like, All it does is make that thing that you've bought that was really expensive and nice not look like a piece of shit.
Yeah, yeah. But what I really
that's the problem, because you don't know what games have been updated and what haven't.
Exactly.
And some of them, they have like a drop down so you can say, show me Xbox One X enhanced games. But that could mean anything. That could mean that they've added 4K resolution support. That could mean they've added HDR support. It could mean they've added a high frame rate. It could mean that they've done very, very little. And there's no way of telling, and there's no way of seeing patch notes or seeing what's been updated, what updates have come in. Like Titanfall 2, famously, the first patch that they had for Xbox One X was a complete disaster because it made it run worse than it did on PS4 Pro. And they'd been talking for ages about, oh yeah, we've got it running at 6K and we downsample it to 4K because it's so powerful. And then it was actually running at like 1280p or something stupid. And it's like, what? How did this happen? So it's weird. And then they did like a patch like a couple of days later and it was all fine. But it's really hard to see patch notes. Yeah. It's not like using Steam on the PC where you can clearly see when things have been updated. It's a bit of a mess from that perspective. But it is a good console. It's a nice update, especially if you've got a decent screen or if you're playing the games that have been updated for it already. And it'll really look good when the next generation of games come out, like Red Dead Redemption 2, for example. That's the game that I'm looking forward to playing and why I have bought this console, because I want to play that the best that I can, knowing that it's not coming to PC. So I'm going to have to play it on the best console that's available, and this is that.
Yeah, I mean, the interesting thing is, one thing I really like about it is the fact that the games are the same, so they're just enhanced. So that's nice in the sense that I could take the Xbox One now, instead of putting it in the attic, I could put it in the sitting room. I could still play exactly the same game, you know, log in with the same account, play the same game. I'm going to play it just as I used to, which was perfectly fine. You know, it didn't really bother me the way it worked. I might notice the difference now moving between them, but maybe that's like moving between an iPad Pro and an iPad Mini or something in terms of just the smoothness of the way things open and stuff. So I really like that, in the fact that, you know, that game I've just bought for the X, it's not going to say, oh, you can't play this anymore. You know, I can still play that on the other device. That's nice. The other thing, though, is like you say about knowing the differences. What's interesting is some games look like they may start doing more of this, and that's what Elite Dangerous have done. So with Elite Dangerous now, when you go in, normally you go into settings of a game on a console and you get, like, you know, control types and field of view, like you used to get in Titanfall and still get in Titanfall 2. But in Elite, what you get is quality now. You're getting almost like PC settings. So you can actually say, I want to run this in 1080 mode and have it super fast performance mode, or I want to run it in quality mode, which is the 4K downsampled mode, and everything's going to be rendered in 4K. So that's more interesting. And that's, I guess, more of an indicator now that we'll see in some games where it says, do you want to, you know, what's the graphic quality level you want to run at? And then you're thinking, okay, now I know, I can sort of judge this about what they're doing differently between these consoles, which is pretty cool.
That's what Tomb Raider does. Tomb Raider has the nicest one because they have three modes. They have like a 1080p mode that looks really nice, a 1080p mode that's really fast in terms of frame rate but looks pretty much the same, or they have the 4K mode. So you can basically go, do I want 4K and slow frame rate? Do I want 1080p but it looks really nice with a slow frame rate, or do I want 1080p but it's got a fast frame rate? Which is kind of nice that you can pick and choose between them. And Assassin's Creed Origins has a really nice high dynamic range panel where you can customize the variance on the high dynamic range to your specific screen. So you can change the luminosity of paper white and how many lumens and whatever for the backlighting so that it's matched perfectly to your display, which is particularly good because most of the time HDR is a little bit blown out and stuff. But HDR is really nice. HDR is the... I mean, I already had it because I had the Xbox One S, which had HDR subtitles. Because it had like a little bit of extra CPU power, and it was just for powering that. And it also had the 4K Blu-ray player, but didn't have the 4K gaming. And so that looked really nice in Forza, which was kind of what sold me on the One X. But I knew from games I've played previously. So Forza Horizon 3 was a great one because I had it on the PC and the Xbox with their Play Anywhere thing, so I could sync my save games and stuff between the two. And even though I could play it on an ultra-wide display, really high resolution, 100 frames a second, best quality settings on my PC, I still sat down and played it on the Xbox, running it just under 30 frames a second, because the HDR looked so nice. And so that makes a huge, huge difference. In many ways, it's probably better to buy a 1080p display with HDR than it is to get a 4K screen, because it'll look really nice on that.
Well, that's what I've heard with people talking about the Apple 4K, the Apple TV 4K with HDR stuff is, you know, people basically saying that you can run an HD television, an HD TV with HDR, and it completely changes the look of HD and 1080p yes. footage, so that you just think you've got a higher quality image. In some cases, the difference that people have been shown, you know, I'm going to show you an HDR 1080p video, and now I'm going to show you the 4K video without HDR. There's a huge.
Or you go difference. HDR every time.
Yeah, yeah, every yeah. Time. So that's what it's interesting because that's what I've heard. I guess,
ideally, you want 4K HDR. That's
well, exactly.
That looks really nice. Yeah. I've got what is it? Planet Earth. Yeah, Planet Earth 2. I've got on 4K Blu-ray. And that looks so good in HDR because, like, the footage, especially with underwater bits, there's like a bit where there's a sloth swimming and the camera's half in the water and half above. And underneath it's just full blue, and above you've got the nice sky and you can see all the fur on the sloth. It's like perfectly rendered because you've got the 4K, so the resolution looks really good, seeing hair and like small fine details. But the colors look absolutely perfectly balanced because, wonderful, wonderful piece of film.
Yeah, that looks cool actually. I mean, we've got a 3D Blu-ray player that I bought a few 3D Blu-rays for. I've just got the Terminator 2 one that's been converted, which looks like it might be interesting. And I quite like 3D. I mean, you know, it's a gimmick, but it's quite nice having a little. It's quite nice sometimes having a little film night with the kids, and you stick the glasses on and watch something. So my problem is if I ever upgrade the sitting room TV, I've basically got to get 4K 3D and 4K 3D, 4K 3D HDR. You can't get passive, it's all active, so it means getting the glasses and all that sort of stuff. So it's not the end of the world, but cost wise it's not as easy as £500. You know, you're talking more like £1,500 at the moment.
4K Blu-ray players are expensive. Like a 4K Blu-ray player is £300-400, which is why it's better just to buy an Xbox One X or Xbox One S. They've got that built in. It's like the standalone 4K Blu-ray players are an absolute fortune.
Yeah, that's true, because actually Yeah, that is true, because all I'd have is the current Blu-ray, which is not going to be 4K. It's going to be a normal Blu-ray, right. Which is HD, isn't it? So it's probably going to cost way more than that. So that's why I'm not...
I don't think there are any 4K 3D Blu-rays either. Like,
yeah, so I'm more likely...
3D Blu-ray or a 4K Blu-ray, but there's no...
Yeah.
At least as far as I'm aware, there's no such thing as 4K 3D. It'll just run in like 1080p.
Right. I think the next upgrade I'll do, if I do one, will probably be HDR, an HD HDR TV. Because I'm not HDR at the moment.
Especially for Netflix as well, because Netflix, most of their stuff's HDR now as well, which is why it looks so nice on the iPhone X.
Yeah, and iPad Pros and the iPhone 8, I think, as well. I think the iPhone 8's HDR. They didn't really push it as HDR, but apparently it is, the iPhone 8.
No, it's not. It's really weird. So it can display HDR content... But
half
it doesn't
HDR.
Have, yeah, it doesn't have a HDR screen, but it can display HDR content. So that means is that they're using their own custom thing so that it looks like if you run the same content on the iPhone 7 and the iPhone 8, which have the identical same screens, it will look better on the iPhone 8 because of the stuff that they're doing. But it doesn't have a HDR compatible screen, because to be a HDR screen, you have to have a certain... contrast ratio between black and white. You have to have a certain number of nits of brightness behind the screen. So the OLED panel is the only one that does it on the phones, because it has that huge contrast ratio of like 30,000 to 1 or something. So I think they're not allowed to call it a HDR screen because it doesn't meet the requirements for HDR, but it still looks way better than it did previously. So it can run HDR content, and they sort of fudge it, and it looks better, but it's not the same.
Right. Okay. That kind of makes sense. I mean, the HDR on the 10 looks fantastic when you look at Netflix stuff.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I was just bringing up Force Awakens, and some of the screens look. It's interesting that it's playing sound when I've got my vibrate switch on, which is annoying. But it looks fantastic.
Some things always do.
It looks fantastic, actually. The colors. Be good to do a side by side, actually. I need to do a side by side with the 7, see what it looks like for some reason, just for my own benefit.
You're talking about 3D glasses. Nice little gimmick brings me nicely to my purchase on Black Friday, which was I gave in and bought myself an Oculus Rift virtual reality headset, and it's pretty good. It's much better than I thought it was going to be. I've played with the HTC Vive before, and I sort of thought that was like the gold standard of VR, but this is actually pretty comparable and in many ways is better, just because it's much lighter on the face. It's not quite as big and heavy. It can't do the full, well, it can do full room scale tracking, but you need to buy like an extra bit, which I didn't bother with because I don't have the space for it. But it's really, really good. I've been playing Elite Dangerous, funny enough. I love playing
that. Oh, God, I'd love to play that.
I play that on my PC and I have like the joystick and throttle and all that kind of stuff set up. And what I usually do is I sit and play Elite Dangerous. And as you'll know, it's a game where you want to listen to a podcast or something while you're playing it, because it's like one of those truck simulator games where you're just driving around a bit. So it's a bit boring in a way. Yeah. It's a nice kind of boring.
Especially when you've jumped out of hyperspace or whatever too early. And
yeah, it's like, that'll be 3 days.
Yeah, your drive's a bit knackered or something or whatever, and you just think, oh, I'll try and make that 12 kilometers, and it's just like, oh my God, this is taking ages.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a bit funny.
So what I used to do is I would play on my PC, and I've got my joysticks and that, and I'd have an iPad set up, and I'd sit and watch episodes of Frasier or something, and have that on the iPad. I could basically sit and watch that while I'm flying around, and it felt like I was doing something else or listen to a podcast. And then when I got it in virtual reality, first of all, it looks great in VR because you're sat in the cockpit. You don't get like any motion sickness or anything like that, because obviously the cockpit stays the same as you. Like, it's all around you, so it's constant. The only thing that's moving is outside the window. And so what you get really is the ability to like look around your cockpit, sort of look around as if you were sat in an actual spaceship. And the cool thing is, like, when you're trying to find like the landing pad, you know how you get that bit where you're like coming in and you're like, where's the entrance to that docking station? I can't quite see it. And you're like turning around trying to find it. Well, with this, you can sort of lean your head forward and like
peek
out the window at the top, because you can just look up and around. It's just like you're looking out the glass canopy. Like, oh, there it is, around there. Around you go. And things like, you know how you look like left to see the interface pops up?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, with this, you just literally look left and it, boop, up it pops.
Yeah, that's...
So I played it for a bit and I was like, this is pretty awesome. But I can't watch my episodes of Frasier now, because obviously the iPad, I can't see it because I've got a big thing on my face. And then I found this...
You need picture in picture.
Well, that's exactly right. So I found this app called V, and it's so cool. You basically, it gives you a web browser in virtual reality, and it's got it pre-configured to a number of things. So I could choose Plex, and then it showed me my entire Plex library in my browser. And you can pick it up with the touch handles, and you can like grab it and just position it wherever you want in the 3D space, and it'll stay there. So
that's
it doesn't matter what game you're using, because it's not beholden to the game. It's like stuck in kind of like augmented reality. So like what position it'll be in. So in the cockpit, it's great, because obviously it'll look like it's in the cockpit because the cockpit doesn't move. So I'm sat in my little spaceship, and then I just pick up this window and I put it over the right-hand side up on the screen, so it looks like there's just a TV screen hanging from the ceiling, and then it's just like, six episodes of Frasier on, and I'm just flying around, and it's just there, as if I was just in my spaceship. It's so cool. And then I went a step further the other day. I found an app called, I think it's called Big Screen, and it's basically designed so you can watch films and stuff in virtual reality, but you like sat in a cinema. So it's like a massive cinema with like a big IMAX style screen at the bottom. And you like look around in the seats, and there's like little virtual people sat in them. And you can invite, if you've got a friend with a virtual reality headset, you can invite them into your like cinema space, and they can sit with you there, like next to you at the cinema watching whatever you're watching. You can like chat and whatnot. And so I had that and had this massive screen. And I was like, oh, what am I going to watch on this? I could watch Force Awakens. I could watch Lord of the Rings. An episode of Frasier. So I just sat watching like 90s comedy, just sat in this massive cinema going, yeah, this is pretty awesome.
Yeah, I mean, it's the Elite Dangerous stuff that I'd love to... Because the Oculus Rift is just a viewer, isn't it? Your PC's still doing the work, yeah?
Yeah.
The Oculus Rift... Okay, right. And you don't get that screen door effect that you get with like the sort of Google VR stuff. You do, okay. But is
you
it
still get
it?
The screen door...
not that bad.
With all VR headsets at the moment, the stuff is still close to your face and the pixel count is still quite low. Like, you really want it to be like 4K there or even 8K, but then the computer would have difficulty because it has to run at 90 frames a second. If you get below 90 frames a second, then you start feeling sick, because then you're dropping frames and it gets really awkward and disturbing. So it has to pump it out quite high. So even with like a really spec'd out PC, if you had it at like 4K in each eyeball at 90 frames a second, that's just not going to happen. So they are quite low res, and they're like 1,200 pixels. So you do still get that, but you kind of get used to it. Like after a while, you forget it's there, and you're just looking at the environment because you're getting engrossed in what you're doing. But if you concentrate, you can see like the little dots in front of you, and when you move your head around, the dots stay in the same place in your vision while everything moves behind it, because it's like looking through a screen. See, I never understood the term screen door, and then I realized what people meant by it. It's like the American it's like looking through a French window is how I describe it. It's like if you imagine looking through dirty French window, if you move your head left and right, the dirt and the glass stays in the same space, but the outside moves slightly. That's what it's like. The main problem that I had was that it mists up quite easily. And so you put it on your head, and obviously your head's warm. And if it's been in my office, which is quite cold generally, when I put it on my face, it like mists up, like kind of like your glasses do if you open the dishwasher and the steam comes up, or you go into a hot room and your glasses fog up. So it did that, but I hadn't realised. And so I'm sat there playing the game. I'm like, why does everything look a bit blurry? And I took it off and wipe it, and it's like, oh, that's clearer, that's better. But then after a few minutes, it got blurry again. And for a minute, I thought when I was putting it on my hair was like brushing against it and was greasy or something. And then I sort of looked at it online and realized, oh no, this is a thing that happens. Like you want to like adjust it to the warmth of the room for 10 minutes, or like use some anti-misting spray or something. But no, it's pretty cool. It's very, very immersive. One of the first experiences I did, it's like Oculus's Dream Deck. Where they have like these little vignettes. So there's one where you're just stood on a skyscraper, and there's like a whole street below you, and you're like right on the edge, and it's like, oh shit. And yeah, I made my wife do that one. She's like, change it. She's like, turn it off.
Yeah.
But the one that got me when I was like, yep, not doing this anymore, was there's a corridor, and it looks like you're in a museum, and you like look to the right, and there's like a poster for like a dinosaur exhibit, and you could see like a dinosaur bone and stuff, and you're like, huh. And then you just hear boom, boom, boom. And round the corner, you just see a T-Rex sniffing the air, and you're like, and then it clocks you, and then it just runs towards you. And I'm stood there, and I'm saying to myself, this isn't real.
Yeah, exactly.
You can stand here and take whatever it's going to do. And it came up to me, and it roared, and I was like, it's fine. It's not real. It's a bit unnerving, but it's fine. And then it bent down, and it was like looking right at my face. And then it like opened its mouth like it was about to like bite me or scream or something. And I was just like, nope. Just threw the headset off. I was like, nope, that's me done. Nope.
It's crazy how
immersive it is.
Well, even, yeah, I mean, when I played with the first Daydream headset, it was the first time I'd done modern day VR stuff. And just standing in the office looking at that, even though the resolution's not great, and you get that
pretty quickly.
You know, you still completely lose track of where you are in space. Yeah. You know, I was in like a cave with a river and looking around, and you're just completely oblivious to what's around you, and you've got distance and you're seeing stuff. And that's I can't justify the space probably or the setup and everything of getting a machine, and it would literally just be to play Elite Dangerous. That's all I'd be doing. That might change in the future if it looks like it's not coming to Xbox One X. I don't know. That's one of the reasons I wanted to go with the X, was I was hoping the whole promise of Scorpio and, you know, the Scorpio with the VR stuff was going to come, and I'm hoping it still does. But
it seems that'll be weird, because awesome. I mean, obviously the PlayStation 4 can do VR,
yeah,
and the PlayStation 4 Pro, and this is much more powerful than that, but it's still not at that sweet spot for frame rate and stuff, and they don't seem to have been interested. They've got all these mixed reality headsets for Windows now, which are basically VR headsets. So it's odd that they haven't made a push into it yet. I guess they want to get something. In the same way that they wanted the Xbox One X to be way better than the PS4 Pro, which it is. I mean, there's no doubt. I mean, it is running native 4K. It's not fudging it. It is much more powerful. But there's not, you know, a huge amount of difference. I imagine they want to do the same with VR. Like, if they're going to do VR, they want it to be way better than PSVR, because otherwise, I mean, that's their competitor. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Their competitor is PlayStation. No one else. So it needs to be much better than that. Otherwise, there's no point. It's one of those things where to convert someone from buying a PlayStation 4 Pro to getting an Xbox One X, it doesn't just need to be the same or even 10% better. It needs to be like 50% better. It needs to be measurably, we have a much better virtual reality headset and we have the games to run on it. And that's where they're sort of failing at the moment, because they don't have many exclusives and all that kind of stuff. So hopefully people will get more excited about the X and that will mean something will happen, but doesn't look like anything's coming anytime soon.
No, I hope so, because it's a real, I mean, I love the, you know, that whole setup you've got with the whole joystick, and yeah, that's the sort of setup I'd want. Have you seen the, yeah. You're not on Facebook, which is where I see them, but have you seen those, there's a crazy company, I think in Australia or something, that make these dedicated gaming pods. The one that's elevated, it basically looks like a mini IMAX, yeah? And this guy's got it completely rigged up with Elite Dangerous, and he sits there in this pod, and he's got his kids next to him, and he's showing them it, and he's got the curved screen. They're using sort of three or four projectors to project each side of the cockpit onto this screen seamlessly with stitching, perfect stitching or whatever. Then he's got like a sort of dashboard in front of him, and people have rigged up, because with the PC game, I think, you know, you can get things like voice extensions where you can talk to the computer and say shields up or whatever. Mm. And someone's written extensions that can run on tablets that give you like some of your display, either your display points or controls, so you can do your sensors. So there's one guy that's got this sort of dashboard rig. It's basically an Elite Dangerous rig. He's got his joystick, he's got his speed throttle, he's got his screens, he's got this wraparound screen. And it, when he sits there flying, it basically looks like he's in a flight simulator, because it is. It's like, this thing's as big as a small room, and you sort of stick it in your garage and you climb into it. You know, you're not sitting with your kids behind you in a living room. You are in a enclosed black space.
That's pretty
where
cool.
They have, it's, I can't remember what it's called, but I'll send you a link. It's bloody amazing to watch. They cost like a bloody fortune, like $15,000 or something stupid, because of all the kit. But it just looks so bloody amazing. I mean, it's a lot of effort to play one game, but Christ, I bet it's just amazing to play. I'd love to play some of the Star Wars VR as well.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff being made, and the quality varies wildly, and pricing is crazy for a lot of these things. Like, you can pay £20 for something that lasts 15 minutes, and it's like, but it does seem like we're getting to a point where it is becoming a viable thing to do. Like, it is way better. They just really need to bump up the resolution of the screen. Like, as soon as the screen gets maybe 50% better, that'll be a huge improvement. At the moment, it's a little bit too low resolution to have it strapped to your face. It's because obviously we always talk about things like retina displays that you're holding, you know, an arm's length away. Or you want a 4K TV, but that's like, you know, several feet away. But this is something that's lower resolution than an iPhone, and it's like right by your eyeballs. So it needs to be higher resolution. But also you want a wider point of view as well, because at the moment I think it's about 120 degrees. So when you've got it on, there's a noticeable black area around your peripheral vision.
Okay.
You're like looking, it's like kind of like looking through binoculars. Like, you can see the edges. You can't see anything out of it because it's all black, and like, it does a really good job of isolating you in that world, so you can't like see your room or anything. But it's noticeable that it's there. I mean, once you get lost into the experience, that all disappears. But once that actually gets wider, so once the screen wraps around the sides a little bit more, and it's a higher resolution, that's when it'll take off, because at that point it'll be very hard to distinguish that you're in virtual reality in a way, because things will just be clearer and
you won't
have that jarring experience of the screen door or the black bars around the edge.
Yeah, and also light leakage. And then the certain headsets, like, you know, the Daydream's a sort of cheap headset, really, but that with the first version, there was a lot of light leakage. So, you know, you had to sort of adjust it and everything to make sure. And also that, I think their angle is really not as good as the Oculus. It definitely feels like you're looking through a pair of binoculars. You're not completely immersed on the sort of periphery and all that stuff, but it's still pretty good as a you know, £50 product that you just stick your phone in, you stick your Pixel phone or whatever in it. It's really, really nice. And if you, it's interesting though, with, it's like the AR stuff, you know, how much it's picked up or hasn't picked up. You know, the kids, when I first put them into the Pixel and put the Pixel on and put the headsets on them, they absolutely amazed by it and played it. But what's interesting now is I don't get any requests to play on it. It's, you know, maybe they think it's gone or whatever, but there's no, can we play on that VR thing or whatever, which is interesting, because it's like they were really into it for about a week, and then it just sort of fell by the wayside, which is, I guess, what happens with these things. It's like the AR stuff.
Yeah. It's one of those things as well that there is a bit of setup. Like, I have it right next to my desk, but even now it's like, I could stick it on and play a VR game, but it's a bit of an effort.
Yeah.
And it's a lot less effort than it should be, because, I mean, my little you've got these tracking sticks with the Rift. These little, they basically look like speakers. So I've got them on my desk. So I don't need to do anything but pick up the headset and stick it on. But I know that I'm going to have to demist it and load stuff up and get into it and everything. And it's like, it is way better than I thought. Also because it has headphones built onto the side of it. And the headphones actually make it more immersive because the, like, for example, the T-Rex, when I'm looking at it straight on, you hear the audio as you would expect. But if I turn my head 90 degrees to the left, you can then hear it more in the right ear than the left, as you would in real life. And the only other time I've played VR, I didn't have headphones. It was just playing out of speakers. So when you turned, it was a bit weird because the audio was still coming out of the TV or whatever you were plugged into. Whereas with this, as it's in the headphones, it's like got spatial audio, which makes all the difference in the world. It makes it so much better. So yeah, it's really good. Highly recommended. It was a decent Black Friday deal. I think I got it for like £300 or something. And I remember when it used to be like £550. So I was pretty pleased with it.
£300?
Yeah.
That's amazing. I actually did buy one. I bought
with the controllers and stuff as well.
Yeah, I don't know why I bought one, but I did buy one when they came on the early offer from the States. And I think I paid £400. I paid $600 or whatever. You know, new, from straight from Oculus or whatever it was, whatever the offer price was. But I thought there was some hope that it was going to work with something that I had, but basically, if it didn't, I was going to sell it at a profit. And I ended up selling it on eBay unopened for double my money, so I was quite happy with that.
And also, those ones would have come with an Xbox controller inside, whereas
that's
now
right,
they have
actual
proper motion controls, and it came with those, and they're usually £100 on their own. And they're really good, because you like grab stuff. Got a load of cool stuff in the buttons, like it knows when you've got your finger resting on a button but not holding it. So like your hands, if you see your virtual hands, you can actually see them like with your thumb resting on whatever button that it is actually resting on. So it feels that much more immersive. And if you lift your thumb up, you suddenly do like a little thumbs up motion and stuff. And it's like, wow, that's really cool. You can like, if you take your finger off the trigger, you're then pointing so you can then poke stuff in virtual reality. It feels very... that's the word I'm thinking of, not interactive, very intuitive.
Sounds really
it's
cool.
Really easy to use. So yeah, it's great, but I'm looking forward to trying a few more things with it. I'm playing a board game tonight. I've got a board game simulator where we can play like games in 3D, and I've played that a few times, and it's really awesome. But that has a virtual reality mode, so I'm going to try that today, so I'll actually be there by this big table and be able to pick up cards and stuff and read it more properly than having to use my controller. So that should be exciting. Well, exciting for me. Anyway, you've got to run off, haven't you? So we should end it there.
It's a good time.
And we'll catch up in a couple of weeks.